listener production.
Okay, are you recording?
Welcome along to episode 205 of the Howie Games Part A, featuring an incredible athlete and an absolute dude. An absolute dude from the Melbourne Storm, Ryan Pappenhausen.
Munster now slides across to Pappenhausen. Dummies, goes for it. Score! Ryan Pappenhausen.
Here we go.
It comes to Pappenhausen. He dummies the kick. Now on the run, he drills it.
He got it.
He got it. Pappenhausen wins the gun. Over the 40. On the Pappenhausen. Stepping, weaving. Goodbye.
When you admire an athlete from afar, but then actually meet them in person and find they are an even more impressive human than they are athlete, that's pretty cool. And that is exactly what I found with Ryan. I'm not sure what the term is, but I have never met a 25-year-old so emotionally engaged with himself, his surroundings, those around him. He's very aware of his place and how he can affect those he comes in contact with in a very positive manner. He's 25. Doesn't sound 25, as you're about to find out. I can only imagine Ryan would be a great teammate and a great friend to have.
So you search and try to find, but you don't know where to go. So many thoughts flood through your mind. You're confused and want to know. Mystery, what is to be? So much more than meets the eye. Listen to me, time is your key. You will find out by and by.
Good news, because for the rest of the season, jump on tickertech.com.au to get your Melbourne Storm tickets. Type them in, and if you put in the code word STORM20, all in capitals, STORM20, you will get a 20% discount on all Melbourne Storm home games. Oh-oh!
So when you search and then you find, know just where to go, and thoughts that once used to cloud your mind, you see clearly and now you know. Mystery, what is to be revealed in King Selassie I. Come on children, trot with me, we want to reach Mount Zion I.
Well, this is outstanding for the Howie Games. I'm not a rugby league guru. I'm not Ray Warren or Matty Johns by any stretch of the imagination, but this man is my favourite rugby league player. He's been through a tough period over the last couple of years. Can't wait to see him playing for the Melbourne Storm again. His name is Ryan Pappenhausen. He joins us on the Howie Games, and we are pumped about it, mate. Great to see you. How are you?
Thanks for having me, Howie. It's I've heard big things about this podcast, so it's an honour to be on here.
Well, you sent me a really kind message when I asked you to come on, but before we get into everything, you've just sat down here in the studio. It's your day off.
Yep.
So what's a typical day off for you?
Yeah, day off for me, I think, is trying to get a bit away from footy. I think we do a lot of work and a lot of video analysis and a lot of physical training during the week. So I think my day off is just trying to get away from that as much as possible. And whether it's going to a coffee or going down the beach there and chilling out. But I love my golf as well. So I'll head out to the golf course as much as I can. Obviously if the body's all right. But yeah, we've got a good group at footy who get around the golf course and yeah, some good bets to get around there too.
Where do you typically play, mate?
So I'm a member at Q. So I used to live up sort of in Richmond and it was very close by, but now I've moved down to Bayside and I'm also a member at the Dunes down in Rye.
So nice.
Two very contrasting courses, but yeah, I like to get down there and play some good golf.
What do you play off typically?
I'm off, I think my handicap's 11.7 right now.
Handy.
Yeah, so I go all right, but I probably should be a bit better for the amount of time I've been putting in, but
Who's the person to beat at the Storm?
Oh, if we're going to go best golfer, I'm going to say Nick Meaney.
Really?
Yeah, he's just consistent. He's got a really smooth swing and, yeah, gets it. It just gets around the golf course well. Cameron Munster had a scratch round during the off-season.
So I would tip him as unpredictable.
Well, exactly. You nailed it.
He strikes me as that.
Unpredictable. I think he had 130 the next week, so okay. He had 71 around Capital and then had 130 when we went over to Fiji. So, he's erratic. They're probably our two, and I'd say I'd be in there to challenge them every now and then.
And you're very cool and calm and collected yet explosive on the rugby league arena. Have you ever thrown a club? Are you calm? Are you feisty? How do you approach golf?
Yeah, well, I think I think it's been a whole process. When I first started golf, I probably was throwing clubs and snapping clubs and carrying on and being
good.
But I feel like I've transitioned. I feel like I've matured now.
Hole in one?
No hole in ones.
Ever close?
Yeah, been close a couple of times. Been close at my old home course back in Sydney, Castle Hill.
Yeah.
I think it was the 11th hole. Nice little par three over the water there. And that's probably the closest I've ever been.
Have you ever played in a pro-am?
I have played in a pro-am.
Oh, who'd you get to play with?
We got to play with, so I had our first, my first pro-am I ever played.
Yep.
We actually won.
Right.
So that was with Velton Myers was the pro. He's from Germany.
I'm not across Velton's Velton, work, to be honest.
And we've stayed in contact since, which is right. A great story. But Dill Buckley was in the group there right. As well. Absolute burglar, Dill. Clean is playing off 23 that day.
Is he? What a ripping podcast and he's got too, Dill and Friends. If you haven't listened, you should.
Outstanding podcast. And Sam Margin from the Rubens, the lead singer.
Right.
So we had a good crew that day. And poor Velton, actually. I remember when we first got our pro-am teams, I was like, who's this bloke? Who's this pro in our group?
You're not meant to know your German pro. He's probably 160 in the world.
But I back myself with my golfers. Like, I watch a lot of the DP World Tour. And
right.
He'd played a few events in that. And yeah, we were sort of like, oh, like it'll be a good day, but like would have been good to be with like Scotty or Cam Smith or someone like that. But Nothing. Honestly, like it was the best day I've had on a golf course, hands down. And we won it. So that was even more special. And we've stayed in contact since. Velton lives over in Orlando and I was over there recently and we caught up for a beer and hung out. And yeah, I guess those sort of relationships you build and still get an occasional text from Sammy and Dill and yeah, I guess we probably weren't that close before, but after that experience. So, yeah, one from one with the pro-ams.
Who have you played golf with that you thought, oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm playing golf with such and such? Apart from Velton and Dill.
Apart from Velton and Dill and Sammy. Well, that's a great question. I feel like those golf games were a while ago now. I reckon even just going around with Gowie.
Right, Paul Gow.
Yeah, Paul Gow, I think. Just the way we sort of get along and he's done a lot in the game, you know. And
he has.
I feel like he's someone that he's on the TV every week and he's commentating golf and to play with him, but then to just how he treats you as a mate and wants to genuinely make you better, I think that's something that I found really special. So, yeah, Paul Gowie, I'll give him a little shout out there.
He's a good man. Most people wouldn't realize, I had a two-year period, a short period as a golf commentator. On course. Channel 10 got the golf years ago when I was working there and it was like you had to, you know, go out. It's like the old whispering role, you know, he's got a 6-9 to the pin, 150 out, blah, 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 blah. Interesting thing, golf commentary. We are that pumped on the show to have you on. Guess who's on after you?
Oh, is it a golfer?
It's a golfer.
No.
Yep.
Wow.
I'm going to test your golf knowledge then.
Okay.
This chap is the current US Masters champion.
No way.
Johnny Rahm is on the show next week. We spoke to him
no
last
way.
Week. We spoke to him last week.
So what?
I know. Not in person. He was in. He was in Jeddah, in Saudi Arabia. We were talking about Liv. I'm a fan of Liv and their accessibility. And we were talking about the fact. So Tommy, who you met, sent me an email. He said, "Mate, I've been speaking to Liv, the guru that is. Who would you like to speak to if we could speak to one Liv player?" And I said, "Johnny Rahm or Phil Mickelson." Thinking.
Just shoot for the stars.
Zero chance. Because if you tried to get either of those two when they're on the US PGA Tour, they wouldn't, like, let's be honest, they would not respond to your email. Tommy comes back to me 3 days later. He said, Johnny Rahm, 6 p.m. from Saudi Arabia next Tuesday night. And I'm thinking, this is not happening. And then I sit there. I was on a few days up in Cabarita in northern New South Wales. So my wife was pumped. I was about to do a podcast on our four-day holiday. And then pops Johnny Rahm for 50 minutes. He was outstanding.
I've seen some stuff he's done with, I think he's done some stuff with Good Good.
Yep.
So I watch a bit of Good Good Golf and
yep.
Just seems like a genuine bloke. So
good
that's
guy.
A great get.
Oh, mate.
That's unbelievable.
It's not quite Ryan Pappenhausen, but it's right up there. So if rugby league went live, right, and someone was offering you $900 million, right? So Ryan Pappenhausen signs a $900 million deal. What's the first thing you're buying?
Oh, first thing I'm buying? Probably a nice little holiday house,
Holiday house on the water. Whereabouts?
I'm probably going to go like Hawaii or something.
Okay.
Just like a nice little 10-hour flight away. And if I spend some time in the US, it's sort of that halfway bit.
And so. You've probably got your private jet at this point with the $900 million.
Well, See, that's the thing, Howie. A lot of people don't know.
What's that?
I'm terrified of flying.
Are you?
So if I'm buying a little jet, it's gonna have to be a big jet.
Right.
It's gonna have to have the proper. Yeah, I'm not getting in a little 12 seater.
What scares you?
Turbulence.
Right.
I think. Yeah, turbulence definitely. And I feel like I've got a little cheat code that's overcome my fear, actually.
Okay. This is now for all those that because I spend a lot of time on planes, and you really feel for the person when you're sitting next to them and you see them, the old cliche, but gripping it, or they start talking a lot, or you can see that they're really concerned. So this is the Ryan Pappenhausen cheat code to overcome the fear of flying. Go.
All right. It is a little bit expensive, but buy some Apple AirPods.
Right.
The Pro Max ones, the ones that like go over your ears, the headphones, the noise cancelling headphones. It's honestly saved my fear of anxiety when I'm on a flight.
So how bad did the fear of anxiety of flight get to?
Quite bad when there was turbulence. When there's none, I'm fine.
Yeah.
But as soon as there's a little bit of rocking or we're dropping out of the sky,
So what is it? How does it come out in you?
Well, I don't really say too much, but I'm quite grippy. Hands start getting sweaty, and then just tell myself stories in my head that probably aren't going to happen.
Right.
But yeah, it gets pretty bad. So,
which is tough when you're a professional athlete that every second week has to get on a plane.
I'm flying every second week and everyone's like, well, why are you playing for Melbourne? We'll go over that, why I think it's so special. But I guess it's probably one of those things that I've had to just overcome and deal with. Well, not really overcome because I still deal with it. But yeah, I think I've found a way now. So.
And so these, you'll get a big sponsorship deal out of this. So what are these, the big boy Apple ones?
Yeah, the Apple AirPods Pro, I think they're called. Noise cancelling headphones. So I bought them when I was traveling back from the States this time. So I had, like I said, had quite bad flight anxiety.
Because you've been going back and forth. That's a long flight too.
Long flight. So I don't do myself any favours. I usually look at the weather map in advance and go, it's going to be a rough flight or it's going
to
be...
So you're looking at to the point where there's going to be turbulence somewhere off the trench off the coast of Hawaii.
Even a flight from Melbourne to Sydney, I'll get the old weather zone app up and I'll look at it and see the radar, and if there's patches of, I guess, going to be turbulence, I'll prepare for it mentally. And I guess the noise cancelling, just the easiest way to describe it is the sound of things gets me anxious.
Yep.
So I don't think it's the movement and dropping out of the sky. I think it's more hearing the engines, hearing the motors, hearing people panic around me that gets me. So I think the noise cancelling thing just eliminated that. And the easiest feeling I had to it was, do you remember when you're just driving around when you're a kid back in the day, dad would be in the front seat and you're drifting off going to sleep and you just feel the rocks and the bumpiness of of the car? That's what I can compare it to now.
Right.
So I'm not even thinking I'm on a flight. I feel like I'm just in the car and it's a little bit bumpy.
My wife put me onto a show that I started watching on a plane. It's called Yellow Jackets on Netflix. Have you seen that? Okay.
No.
Don't watch it. One, it's a horror, but it's about a girl's football team, a girl's soccer team from America. It's not true. And they're all in a plane crash. And the visual representation of the plane crash. So to me, watching TV and movies, the worst plane crash that you think will be realistic, Tom Hanks when he ends up on the island.
Yeah.
This Yellow Jackets plane crash is a whole next level frightening plane crash. So do not watch it.
Okay, won't watch it. And you watched it on a plane too.
I watched it on a plane. I'm like, why is my wife telling me to watch this? Now, when I came in here, you had your iPad out and your phone and you were taking notes. This is up to you how much you want to tell me about what's going on here. I did a podcast a while ago with a chap called Harry Garside, a boxer. He's a big note taker, big note taker. Nat Fyfe, the AFL footballer, is a big note taker. And then he looks back on the notes he took a year ago to see how he's progressed in life. So at this stage, a year ago, he might have been struggling with A in his life, and he refers back to that. And now, a year later, is he still struggling with that, how he's worked through it? Why are you taking notes, firstly?
Yeah, I think it's probably a combination of both those things, really. I think I like taking the notes to become a bit more self-aware, and it's pretty similar to Fifey's strategy, I think. It's pretty cool to look back on what I've written, whether it's on my iPad or in a journal, and I keep all my journals from when I first moved down here. That's when I started, 2017, and some of the things I wrote there and some of the people I thanked, I just like taking a photo of it and send it to them and just seeing the impact that they've had now. And
that's nice.
I just think it's really cool to, I don't know, I feel like my memory's not that great. And it's just one way I can look back and, I guess reflect on the journey and I guess be more in the present. If I'm taking notes now, I feel like it's getting my feelings out into a page, or if I've got something I really want to say and I might forget it, it's there. And yeah, I just feel like it's always going to be there digitally or whether it's on paper. And then I think my big thing in life is I want to help people. And if I can document my journey along the way, then it will be easier to relate to someone who's going through a rough period, or relating to a 18-year-old who's just moved down to Melbourne and finding it a little bit tough, rather than hopefully I've experienced a lot from there, but I can go back to that and be like, wow, I did feel quite vulnerable in that moment. And yeah, I feel like it's probably only something I've done since I moved to Melbourne. And the last couple of years, I've picked up a bit more strongly of how I want to go about it. And yeah, I feel like it helps me and puts me in a good spot in the future where I might be able to help others. So yeah, that's why I do it.
It's a beautiful description of doing it. And you're obviously really in touch with your emotions. Before I ask you to read something off that, which is up to you if you want to, when you talk about being present, I went through a period last year. I came back from India from the IPL and I couldn't sleep. I was really struggling to sleep. And a couple of people put me onto a meditation app and it was all about being present. What does it mean to you to be present?
Yeah,
it's a bit of a
buzzword.
Buzzword. Yeah. It is. Yeah. It's hard to. I think it means different things to different people.
Yep. No, I agree, and I think being present to me is obviously being able to connect with someone. I think, a lot of the time, if you've got something preoccupied ideas of someone or the way they're going to go about things, you might go in with a different perspective and probably not take it for what it actually is. And yeah, being present for me is disregarding things that have happened, and it's a new page. So whether it's me talking to you today or me meeting someone out in the street, you can hear things about someone, but it's like you've got to take it for what it is and just go on that journey. You might take things out of that, you might learn things from it. And like I said, I've learned a new show not to watch today. So.
Yeah, I've been watching Yellow Jackets.
But I think if you can be present, you are so open to learning and you are so open to thinking about things a different way. That's my perspective of it.
So in a rugby league perspective, it's, you know, being present or meditation or mental preparation, do you have a mental routine you go through before you run out at Amy Park to play for the Storm?
Yeah. So I think my preparation's probably changed a lot since I first started. I used to just think it was game day. I used to think I can do whatever I wanted throughout the week, and game day I'll go through my routine and that'll get me in good shape. And I probably got caught in a bit of a false sense of security with that. I had quite a bit of success early on in my career and thought that's the way it was. And it probably wasn't until the last couple of years with what I've experienced that I've realized preparation's not just that one day. It's months of work. It's those little habits that you build into your routines. And I guess now I'm in a spot where I can confidently say I prepare well, because I know what preparation looks like. It's not just that day. It's the work you do before. So yeah, I feel like your idea of it changes over time, and I'm still not perfect with my preparation, but I feel like I'm doing the right things to put things in place, and I'm actively trying to grow and learn and be someone who, at the end of the day, can have a really good preparation and, like I said before, help someone who might not, or just be a good role model for someone who's not doing it too well.
Hold that thought, because we'll get later on how you do prepare. Okay, you've got your iPad there. Are you happy to read anything off there? Mate, you don't have to. You can completely say no to me.
This is a freshie. This is a fresh one. Literally my laptop just broke down. So
you've got your new Apple.
Got my new Apple.
I think if you haven't already got an Apple deal by the end of this podcast, you've plugged two of their products already now next year, and now you're holding up your iPhone.
Very true.
I think you're a chance.
So I literally, the only notes I've got on this are like a couple. You know what? I'm just going to do it.
Only if you're comfortable.
No, you know what? I think it's worth getting out there. So this is my diary entry for yesterday.
Okay.
So it's a little one, but I thought, you know what? It's first day with the iPad. I'm going to write it down. I've got plenty of my notes.
Yep.
But I literally wrote this last night. So first day with the iPad. Today was a long day and there were times I felt flat and not ready to have energy. I was conscious of needing to have good vibes and bring my teammates with me, but I also think I was quite focused. What do I need to do to feel comfortable for Friday's game? ? And that's for me to answer today.
So okay.
Just like little things like that get me thinking.
It's introspective,
a little bit.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
It's something a little bit different, but
I think a lot of really successful people do this type of thing.
Yeah, it's something that I quite, I guess, I used to be scared of what I wrote down because I'm like, what if someone reads it? But I'm also like, it's so raw. It's so with how I'm feeling. It's so helps me understand that day exactly how I'm feeling. And I guess now it's just about trying to, like I said, I'm quite in touch with my emotions, but it's trying to use different words or trying to describe it in a way that I can go, bang, that's exactly how I felt, you know? And yeah, that was last night, just sitting there, just acknowledging that, yeah, I probably didn't feel the way I needed to, but I also acknowledged that I needed to be a good leader. I needed to probably send off some better vibes. And how can I do that better next time? How can I be a better leader these next few days for us to prepare best for Friday night's game? So
it's interesting you say that you're a bit, in your words, what did you say? You were focused on yourself.
I was focused on myself, but I was also self-aware. I was quite, what do I have here? Yeah, there were times I felt flat and not ready to have energy. I was conscious of needing to have good vibes and bring my teammates with me. But I think I was also quite focused on myself, which I think as you go on and as you experience things, I think the best leaders are the ones who bring their teammates with me or with you. And yeah, I think in that moment, I've probably felt a lot of myself and was just trying to focus on myself, but I need to provide value and show those guys that, no, they're just as important as what my job is, you know? And yeah, I think that's what I realized yesterday.
So when this has come out, you will have played the Panthers on Friday night, the first game of the season for the Melbourne Storm at home. I read your coach in the paper yesterday saying occasionally your team can win two in a row, but in his eyes, three in a row makes them an extremely special football team. From an external view, and you've obviously played against them, what is it about that particular rugby league team that has enabled them to dominate a really even competition?
Yeah, it's quite amazing what they've been doing, to be fair. It's
especially the father-son thing. Fascinating.
Yeah, crazy.
Amazing. Imagine, sorry to interrupt, when you came in here, we were talking about cricket and I said, oh, occasionally play with a young bloke. Imagine the coach coaching his son.
Yeah.
Imagine the love and joy that must bring those two gentlemen.
And I've been quite fortunate. I've been fortunate enough. I played with Nathan and we did schoolboys together in 2015, I think it was. And like Ivan was obviously there watching Nathan. I think Ivan was, he's had a pretty rough coaching career, to be honest, before this point. And he was getting hammered. He was getting hammered in the media. But he would still put himself out there, go watch Nath play, talk to all the parents. I know the impact that he's had on my parents and the way he sort of came across to them and introduced himself. And he was just like a normal dad, you know? So you see that side of him and him getting hammered in the media and then coming out years later and having a three-peat with his son. It's like, well,
crazy.
It's an amazing story. And yeah, I guess having to have dealt with Nathan Ivan a few times, it's, you genuinely feel good for him. Yeah, you know, sort of what they've gone through and how they've been hammered. And it's quite easy for the media to jump on board if father's coaching your son and picking him every week. Oh. But Nath's done that work now. He's done all the craft to get to where he is and to be one of the most dominant halfbacks in the competition. So
last year's grand final is like,
it's unbelievable.
And then old mate just says, I'm going to win this game by myself.
Yeah. Well, I turned it off with 20 minutes to go because I was like, I don't really want to see the celebrations. I just, you know, the game's over. It was a good game, but they're done. And then, yeah, I got a message from mate being like, it ain't over. And
so you could watch the game but had no interest in the celebrations?
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I could watch the game and just, yeah, I don't know. There's something about it where I just thought it was another missed opportunity. And, yeah, one of those ones where I'll be hungry for it again, but I just can't watch it. So no, I think that what they do well is they've adapted to the times of the game. They haven't just kept the same way of playing 3 years in a row. They've changed the game and they've got teams chasing them now to play their style. And I think that's one thing that you got to give the coach credit for is, you know, he didn't just rest on his laurels. He was, let's make this team better. How can we be better? Mm. What squad have we got? All right, let's play this way now. And I think the way that they've adapted to the times and kept their sort of basics and fundamentals the same, which is, I think, quite important. But yeah, just the way they're going about it and with the rule changes and yeah, now they've sort of come out on top and everyone's chasing their tail.
The name Pappenhausen, where does that come from? What's the origin of that
name? It's Dutch origin.
Is it Dutch?
Yes, yeah. So my, obviously dad's side of the family, my opa, I think he pretty much, he worked on ships and met my nan on one of the ships.
Is she Dutch or not?
She's a Pommy.
Right.
So they met and then, yeah, came to Australia and yeah, had my dad. So yeah, Papenhuyzen Dutch.
It's a, when you hear, as I say this to most guests, but the last 2 days I've immersed myself in you, and I'm not a massive rugby league watcher. I watch the Storm, and I wasn't joking when I said that. I watch when you're playing because I just love the way you are out in the field, and I love you even more now after having a 15-minute chat with you here. But it's a name when Rabs would say Papenhuyzen, and now Dan Ganane's got the same thing. It's just a name that it's a good name for commentary, Papenhuyzen.
Yeah. Papenhuyzen pins her ears back and scores.
It's quite cool though because I remember when I first was coming through and you'd play your Balmain under 16s in an afternoon and you'd score a try and the commentator would have no clue how to say it.
He's like, oh no.
And you'd have all these different versions. But I think what's really cool about it now is like you'll walk the streets and someone will say, oh, Papenhuyzen, and then they can say it. And yes. I'd get a kick out of that
because that's cool.
I think there's probably a long time where anyone in my family, like whether it's teachers at school or...
Well, it's how to spell it too.
How to spell it and how to say it. And it's like, well... One thing that I think is really cool now is actually people know how to say it. And my opa probably sits there, God love him, he's in a nursing home now, but like he'd just be so proud whenever we'd go over there.
Yeah, imagine when he came out and no one could pronounce his name and now it's a nationally recognised like name.
Yeah. So it's that's a really cool feeling to be able to, I guess, put your name on the map and for people to say it correctly. And I get a really big kick out of that. And yeah, I guess they'll be proud as well. But yeah, early days, it was quite embarrassing. You nearly didn't want to score, so your name didn't get called.
What type of stuff? What type of butchery did you get? All sorts.
Yeah, everything really. People would just stop at Pat really because they go, I've got no clue how to say this. But so the poor ground announcers, they probably had a hard time back in the day. And yeah, now I'm just grateful that.
Everyone knows
how to say it, yeah.
So you played a lot of sport growing up, yeah? I saw some pictures in a piece you did with Channel 9 and I think you had a cricket bat in hand. Mm-hmm. So compare yourself to a modern Australian cricketer. What way did you bat? Did you bowl? Were you a solid opener or a dashing middle order or a big ripping leg spinner? What were you?
I'm probably a self-proclaimed all-rounder.
All-rounder, okay.
All-rounder.
Bowling heat or bowling spin?
Bowling heat, but I could come back on and bowl off spin. That was my thing. I'd open the bowling and bowl quick.
Yep.
Whether that was consistent.
Right.
I think the speed was consistent, but direction definitely not. there were definitely a few wides and a few leg byes. But
then you'd come on later in the innings and roll out the offies.
Well, I could, I could. If we needed a bit of a change-up, I'd come out roll the offies. But to tell a story about my cricketing, my days, I went to a clinic where they sort of mark you up on how you're going, you're batting, you're bowling. And
yeah.
Thought I was doing all right, went to the nets and smacked a few balls around and bowled pretty well. And I remember they pulled me over after and they said, mate, there's a new game that we think you'd be good at, but Test cricket's not it, mate. We think you'd be right at T20.
Right, straight to the IPL for Papenhuyzen.
Straight to the IPL, but I don't think it was too big when I was playing back in the day. I sort of took that as a bit of an insult. I was like, oh, like I thought I was going all right. But I just had no patience. I'd go out there and smack the ball and... Yeah, it'd be 3 metres outside off and I'd run over and try belt it.
Did you ever have a day out where you made a big score or got a bag of wickets?
Yeah. You know, I probably got more wickets than big scores. I probably was more a bit of a bowler because, you know, sort of at that age when you're a bit younger, if you bowl a bit of express, you don't need to be bowling too consistent to pick up wickets. I had some really memorable scores. Never actually got a century. I think we were sort of retiring or... Our team would be bowled out by the time he got to 100.
Well, what about a bag of wickets? Did you get one of those trophies with the claw?
With the ball in it. Yes. Yeah, got that. Nice 6-for.
Six was good work.
I think it was 6-for 14 or something.
That's
like
good
that.
Numbers.
So great numbers. That was fun. But probably most memorable one was a 50 with one of my best mates. So he wasn't that good at cricket, but like we just were out there one day, Bernie Mullane, back in Sydney, and the thing about our team was there'd always be one or two that just score and everyone else gets bowled out for a duck. So
I watch a lot of junior cricket. I see a bit of that.
So I reckon I got a 50, he got a 50. We obviously got to raise a bat at the same time, shake our hands. And we're just best mates who'd like played rugby league together and then here we are playing cricket together. And it was probably Division 2 or something like that. But one of those moments where you sort of look back on and I've still got the scorecards of those because I'm like, it was just one of those nostalgic feelings of like, it wasn't rugby league, it was something else. And yeah, nice little 100 partnership with my best mate to win a game. So that was probably one of them. And I'd love to play cricket. Like, I love to still go down to the nets. I love to still do all of that because, like I said, it's quite nostalgic and I get a kick out of it. But I also think there's different learnings you can get from different sports and you can put it back into your own. So love cricket. Yeah, I think I'll go back and play it once I'm retired.
Back to Ryan shortly. You will have heard who our next guest is in this episode with Ryan. Our man Ryan couldn't believe it. And to be honest, either could I when Tommy lined him up. So well done to Tommy. He really pulled out a big gun here. The reigning US Masters champ, if you don't mind, and one of the biggest sports stories of 2023 when he swept all before him on the golf course, then signed an enormous deal to join the LIV Tour. He will soon be in Adelaide for that amazing LIV event. I speak, of course, of next week's guest, Mr. John Rahm.
It was a family decision. I'll never want to do something that, you know, my wife or anybody in my family would be against, and having their support and going through pros and cons, which I could get into it for a very long time, I ended up deciding to go, right? I think if you look at my stage of my career playing good golf, I just won the Masters, 5-year exemption for all majors, right? My value as a player would say would be an all-time high. I think it was the right time for me to go and maybe be able to make a positive change for the better, right?
That's John Rahm joining the podcast next week. Let's get back to Ryan.
Rugby league. What did you play? Under what? What's the first actual organised game you would have played and who was it for?
Under sixes.
So under sixes.
Under sixes. Kellyville Bushrangers.
Right. Where's Kellyville?
So that's like northwestern Sydney.
Good name.
Moment. So Kellyville Bushrangers. Yeah. Ned Kelly. He was our mascot. And yeah, we sort of, I guess, Parramatta Eels now train out of there.
Uh-huh.
So they obviously used to train in the heart of Parramatta and now they've come out to Kellyville, and I played my first ever junior rugby league game on that field that they train at now. So
cool.
By all accounts, I was a bit of a sook the first few years.
Right.
I think I'd, yeah, sort of just, Dad was a coach, so I thought if I could just throw a tantrum on the field, he'd come over and save me. So yeah, I guess if you were probably someone watching my early days of footy, you're probably thinking this bloke's never going to make it. But I think those experiences make you stronger, and yeah, here I am now. So yeah, Kellyville Bushrangers.
So I often ask this to the guests, and I always use this comparison, and one of them's really happy with a comparison. One of them's a bit flat with a comparison. You'll be able to figure it out. Ricky Ponting was always going to play cricket for Australia. Mm-hmm. He was a standout. He made runs right from the start. Justin Langer, not so much. Had to work and grind the whole way. And hello to both of those great men. Were you a standout junior footballer where the opposition were like, oh, we're playing that Ryan, whatever his surname is, this week or not? And there's no time for modesty.
Yeah, no, it's a tough question. I wouldn't think so. I think I always had a little bit of talent, but once again, not enough to say he's going to make it. You know, I think
so. You weren't wasn't right. This kid's always going to play.
I don't think so. And you obviously you hear, I guess, parents with kids that you played with back in the day say, oh, he was always going to make it. But
yeah,
I don't think so. And yeah, I didn't make any sides during primary school or anything. You know, kids make you sort of New South Wales and
that wasn't you.
Victoria, that wasn't me. No. So I played a bit of touch footy, and that's probably where I got my, I guess, confidence that, oh, I'm actually can sort of play this game. But rugby league, I was like, oh, like, I'll do it. It's fun. I love it.
Yep.
But I don't think it's sort of going to be anything. I obviously had dreams and wanted to, but I think not having that pressure and not being like a prodigy, I think that's probably helped me.
Yeah, so, my word. And were you a lover of the game? Did you watch it? Did you have posters on your wall?
Yeah, I was a tragic. I'd nearly have every NRL team's jersey. Huh. Whenever Friday night footy was, whatever team was playing, I'd throw on that jersey and I'd go play like a little preview game in the front yard by myself. I'd commentate. I'd have footy cards in my room. Whenever Mum sent me to my room because I was in trouble, I'd pull them out and have a little 13v13 with the footy cards and commentate that. And if she took the footy cards away, I'd get the marbles out and pretend they were players. So it was just
she couldn't stop you then.
I was obsessed. I was obsessed with footy, no doubt. Yeah, probably had a few teams. I just liked players. I liked people who...
Which players did you like?
Well, I liked the guys who were probably a bit more like me, a bit smaller, probably weren't your typical NRL player, but they were quick.
Yep.
They were lightning. So I think Benny Barber was one that stands out when he had that run for the Bulldogs. Brett Camorley, he actually played for the Melbourne Storm. But I didn't know that when I was a kid. I'd sort of liked him when he was at the Sharks and then when he went to the Bulldogs. But yeah, I just like the way they go about it. They were little. They weren't scared to throw themselves in there. And yeah, I guess that's probably my first realization that, oh, like you actually can make it if you're not that big. And you get people along the journey saying, yeah, like you're going to be too small. You need to put on weight. But I just think that's a bit of an excuse, to be fair. I think if you're willing and able, you'll find a way. And I was lucky enough that I had some good, I guess, people around me to nurture me and take me on that journey with them and not necessarily push me hard, because I think there's a real fine balance of being pushed hard, but then also just being nurtured in a way to, like, you can make it, this is what you have to do, but then they step away. And I think that's something that I've found really important is I didn't have someone that hammered me all the time. It was like, these are the tools, this is what you'll probably figure out. Throw me into there and then I got to figure it out for myself. Gotcha. And then I've just sort of built from there. But
can you remember meeting as a kid? I'm sure you came across them, professional rugby league player. Did you meet these guys?
Yeah. Yeah. So I met, I think Nathan Hindmarsh might have come out to one of our trainings.
Big Hindy.
When I was a kid.
And would that be stars in your eyes for you?
Yeah. Just one of those moments where you're like, wow, like, these guys are real, you know? And, like they're just cool dudes. Like I was a little 8-year-old kid, and I think I was wearing my Sharks jersey, and Hindy came out to training, and I don't know if his brother might have been at the Sharks or something like that, but like he didn't treat me any differently, you know. And that's probably something I've come to realize is like I don't care who you go for, you know. If you're not a Melbourne Storm fan, if you're a rugby league fan, I get a massive kick out of that. And I was one of those kids, so I still feel like once it goes, it ties back to the journaling. I really try to relate to how I felt when I was a kid and when we go back and do things with the junior clubs. I try to put myself back in those shoes because, yeah, it's a moment where you don't have to do much. Like even just being there, they get such a great kick out of it. But
and what's that like when a kid comes up to you and has, you know, the number one Storm jersey on his back and he looks up to Ryan Pappenhausen?
Oh, I love it. And you sort of see the look in their eyes too. Yeah. It's like they're just staring at you with their jersey, and it's like it's such a great feeling. And I try to acknowledge that every time I see a number one or Pappenhausen on the back, I thank them for, you know, for doing it. And I guess it's probably one of those things where it's just a jersey, but even with a haircut or a mullet, and you sort of hear people say, oh, my son got a haircut because of you. And I just think it's a really cool feeling because I want to be a role model and I want to be someone who can give back and share my experiences for the hope that there might be a little kid back in Kellyville at the moment that's liking his footy, but it is a bit rough for him, or he's been told he's too small. And if I can be that guy for them to express themselves and want to be themselves and just want to be better in life in general, then yeah, I think that's something that I get the most sort of gratitude out of. And something I'd like to strive for the rest of my career.
I love it. Talking about the mullet, I was just thinking about this on the way up, who my favourite mullet wearers are in sport. Do you look at someone else's mullet, because yours is elite, do you look at someone else's and think, right, that's my next step that I've got to get to reach the full mullet standard?
Yeah, I think it's hard not to go past Baz Lenker.
Yeah.
He's just long and luscious, isn't it?
It's luscious. It's well kept. It's well flowing. Kept, it's bouncy.
Yeah, he just, I don't know what he does to it. I don't know what he feeds it.
But I don't know.
It's quite impressive, but I think he's probably the gold standard for sport. I think you look at the Live Golf, like we're saying, Cam Smith.
Yes, so you've got two of mine.
He's a bit different, a bit rough around the edges, a bit curly, a bit short, but I think he's got a pretty impressive one. And I think the thing I like about it is like, he's at the top of his sport and he's rocking it, you know? Like, there's something about it. I don't know, me personally, this like probably goes a little bit deeper here, but I think it gives you that confidence to express yourself.
The hair.
Does it? And that's probably what I've found. And what you see from kids getting it, and that's the feedback I've got from parents, is like, he's been more himself. He's, you know, he's expressing himself. And I wouldn't have been allowed at school. So there's part of me that's, I don't know if it's resentment or whatnot, but I'm just like, I get why school's there and I get the discipline part of things, and I know it's probably not the most presentable haircut you can have, and I understand that, but if you can give a kid a license to be who they want to be and explore things, and I think that's just a great power to have, and I probably realised that once I got the mullet.
So for me, I was thinking top three mullets in Australian sport in no particular order were Smith, Cameron, Smith-Bailey and Pappenhausen Ryan.
I'll take
got one extra for you that really thrills me, because this chap has a Australian partner, and that's where he's picked it up, and he uses the term, do you have any interest in Formula One?
Yeah.
Valtteri Bottas. He's rocks a real rude, not as lengthy and flowing as yours and Basilenko's, but a short with a real flick at the back, and you occasionally see him wearing a VB singlet. This is a play from Scandinavia. I appreciate Valtteri's mullet.
Right, yeah.
Actually,
yeah, I think was he rocking it when they come down under last time? I think you've seen it.
Yeah,
I wonder
if
he's grown it out for this one coming.
I don't know. Well, I didn't. I only saw him on his helmet in Bahrain last week, but he's definitely rocking it in last year's Drive to Survive. If you weren't going to be a rugby league player, you're obviously a really well-spoken and I'm sure a clever chap. Was it something you wanted to do with your life?
It's a great question. I think it's varied since I've started footy. I don't think I would have been a confident speaker straight out of school. I think take footy out of the equation, I think I would have probably been a teacher.
With a mullet, the kids would have loved you.
Well, I don't know if the mullet would have come around, you know.
Mate, you might not have expressed it, but yeah, I think they would have loved Mr. Pappenhausen.
Yeah, no, so I don't know. I'm probably a teacher. My mum's a teacher. I feel like it's only natural. I really liked our culture at our school, where a lot of the ex-students went back and taught, and it's probably only now I see the value of teachers and how important their role is into shaping a kid's future, you know. Just being someone that might believe in them a little bit more than what their parents do or mentors do. And I could probably see myself doing that, but I think I've learned a lot from playing footy and what I want out of it. And ideally now, I think, one, I don't think I'd like to work as hard as what I do now. Once I finish footy, I'd like to probably have things in place, whether that's some investment set up or just being able to be a mentor, or be sort of a life coach where I can direct my energy that I've learned and everything I've learned into something that's going to make someone else better. And that is sort of like a teacher, I guess. So I think it's always been there of wanting to help people, and in what capacity, I don't know. But I think I'd like to get to a spot where I still have the freedom that I have, that I can keep learning and exploring different things, but then be able to give back and teach or be a mentor or have a successful business where I can guide people through that. And I think that's where I'm learning at the moment is the whole business side of things and wanting to be better and putting things in place so I can do that, and I don't have to worry about having to go to a 9-to-5 and do all that. I'd like to educate myself enough to be able to help, and in what capacity, still trying to figure it out.
I reckon any organisation or individual would be very lucky to have you. Got a few notes here that Tommy put together. I'm not typically big on notes, but certain games or periods they want to touch on with you to sort of bring out your full story of success, and then some real, real, real tough times, probably as tough a time as any athlete in Australia in the last couple of years. So the West Tigers signed as a 16-year-old. So like what happens on day one? Is that with the full squad, or is that with a junior program, or like you're 16 and you're little as it is, I'd imagine.
I think so. Probably, I think my first contract, it would have been 16. It would have been like $3,000 or something, just tiny. But it was like an under-20s contract, so I never actually got to train with the NRL squad.
Right.
It was always sort of juniors, 20s. But I had probably 3 years in that 20 system. And, didn't really know foot. Like, I knew how to play it. Obviously, I'd played it for a while, but I didn't understand what it took. I thought what I'd done to get me to that point was going to be enough, and I could just keep doing that week in, week out. And then had a few injuries during 20s. I did a few hamstrings, probably played 5 or 6 games in 2 years. And I guess because I was preoccupied with university and
Were you being studying? Home,
yeah, I was studying physical activity and health science at ACU. Okay. So
yeah, strength.
Catholic University. Yep. Yeah. So I was studying, and then I think because I was preoccupied with other things, like whether that was work or uni or being with my family, I don't think I put enough energy into footy and what it took to be a professional athlete. So
yep.
I probably just cruised through those years, and Probably felt a little bit sorry for myself of I'm just getting injured. It's not my fault. There's nothing more I can be doing, you know. And yeah, and just sort of going through the motions. And I think that's something that obviously we'll get onto the journey, but I think moving down to Melbourne's changed my whole perspective on things. But I dead set in that period when I was signed as a 16-year-old, I still thought I'd just cruise in the first grade. I didn't think I'd make a career out of it, but I thought, you know, I'll play a few games. And you just think that's how the path is. And I probably didn't have anyone before me that I could get a gauge off until I moved down to Melbourne. But yeah, that's sort of how it came about. Signed at 16, a few 20s games. And
yeah. And then what happened? Does someone say at West, you're not for us? Or
no,
so it's a very different system. So we have obviously you have a draft in the AFL. You have no choice of where you're going. How did it work in your world? So how do you end up from West? Have a drink of your what did Tommy bring you in here?
Iced decaf latte.
Iced decaf latte.
I'm a decaf train, don't judge.
Mullet wearing iced decaf latte. So what happened?
So it's funny. Like, it's not a draft. It's a pretty much a free agent. So as soon as you come off contract, there's about, so let's say 2016, 2017. So when you've got a year left on your contract, you're able to negotiate with other teams. Before that, it's only the club you're at, you're allowed to negotiate. So that happens at November 1. Okay. November 1's the date. So yeah, pretty much I was coming off contract, or I still had another year at the Tigers.
Were you getting love from the Tigers in this early contract situation?
They didn't push me out the door or anything, by no means. I think they were actually quite respectful with how they went about it, and they put their trust in me, which I respect massively, and I'm forever grateful for that they did that. But they put their trust into me to be at the club, and it just got to a stage where I was coming off contract and Tigers put an offer to re-sign me. So I'm not sure the figures of it, but it was a 3-year contract, sign on, and then Melbourne just come knocking at the door being like, oh, we want to sign you as well.
And when it's Melbourne,
yeah,
does that mean you get a call from Craig Bellamy, or no, it's an administration style situation?
It's all sort of done through my manager at the start. So
who's your manager?
Clinton Shavosky.
Okay.
So he, they sort of, I guess, talk, and then he'll correspond with me being like, oh, Melbourne have given you an offer. And it's like,
what's your initial thought when you hear that?
Yeah, like Melbourne, like Melbourne Storm. He is, yeah. I was like, what? And Clinton, obviously, he played a massive career playing rugby league. And I think he was even a bit shocked being like, yeah, like Melbourne, like we should probably take this, you know? And,
right.
And because they've got such a great rap for turning average NRL players into regular first graders, that really appealed to me in the stage of life I was. And it wasn't just that, it was the mentors I was going to be taught under. You know, you got Billy Slater, Cooper Cronk, Cameron Smith, Craig Bellamy.
Incredible.
The Bromwich brothers, Kafusis, like, the list goes on. And it was, I don't think I realised at the time, I was like, I've always admired the Storm from afar because of how successful they've been. But I think from talking to Clinton, he just reassured me that, like, not many people ever get this opportunity at 19. Mm. I think it was 18 at the time, 18, to go down to Melbourne and work their craft under the best fullback to ever play the game. And I was like, that is so true. And there was a few rumours at the time that they were trying to sign a few other fullbacks in that position that were my age. And it was sort of like that probably kicked me into gear a little bit, being like, no, like, I want that, you know? Yeah. And just got to a decision where Melbourne matched the Tigers' offer. And with mum and dad's blessing, they just said, you've got it. Like, you've got to do it. I think they understood the enormity of it as well. And yeah, just from there, it was bang. You have a meeting with Craig and Frank. And
so that meeting, Craig came on this show, I reckon it was in the back of COVID, because it was via Zoom. Yeah.
Yep.
We were in lockdown. He was fantastic. But I'll never forget, we often get the guest on Zoom to record their end of the conversation on the phone. It's not a big detail. And then they WhatsApp me through the audio. He had to get someone from the club to come round to his joint to get the file out of his phone to send it through to me. But my takeaway from that conversation, and he's a modest man, and I'll ask you more about him, but his answer to the question, why have you been so good and been able to turn journeyman blokes that have been left out of other clubs, injured players, into elite parts of a team, and he said, I'm very clear on each player's exact role. I tell them exactly what they want them to do. If they're up to that standard to play that role, they'll get a game and they'll fit in with the system. So what did he say he wanted from you? And, you know, he's obviously influential in you getting down there. Yeah. Like, what was he seeing in you?
Yeah, I don't think he ever guaranteed anything. And I think that was probably what I needed was, no, mate, you've got to work hard. You work hard, you'll get your rewards. And he's very big on that. He's got a quote that he goes by is sort of that hard work puts you where the good luck can find you. And I guess you see him do that. But that meeting we had, it was like, oh, you're not guaranteed to play first grade, but come down here. We've got a few good mentors and you'll work hard and you probably won't work as hard as ever in your life, but we think you can get something out of it. And I was like, you know what? There's that little bit, there's that little drive in me that I probably haven't achieved what I needed to achieve. And the premiership's always been a massive goal. And I thought, you know what? I think I can do that at Melbourne, whether I get my chance or not. I don't know if I'll ever play first grade, but I think I'm going to get my best chance by going down there.
And so when you signed on, if Billy was the number one fullback, where were you in the list of fullbacks? Oh,
yeah. Gee, pretty far down. So you sort of had Billy, Jerome Hughes, who's now a halfback, was a fullback. Yep. Scott Drinkwater, who's the main fullback at the Cowboys up in North Queensland now. Then there was probably me. So
fourth string.
Yeah, fourth string.
So you roll down there, yeah, right? You turn up for your first day, this little fella, and you've got Smith, Kronk, Slater and Bellamy. Like, what's your first thoughts when you roll out on the track for the first time?
Well, it probably happened a few weeks before I actually moved down there. I remember I had a night out in Sydney. It would have been Friday night or something. Went to Hillside, Castle Hill there, with a few boys. I would have just freshly turned 18. And I remember waking up on Saturday morning to a call. And I was like, what's going on here? I was a little bit dusty, sort of picked it up, answered it. Hey, mate, it's Billy Slater from the Storm. Heard you coming down, mate. Can't wait to work with you. And I was like, I've got to be tripping. This is going to be a dream. This is going to be some sort of...
So this is to you like, wow, this is Billy Slater.
Yeah, I remember it. I remember just turning to my side, picking up my phone off the bed, being like, what the fuck? Like, no way he's calling me. Anyway, my voice was like cracking and I was just so nervous. I was like, oh, yeah, hey, mate, yeah, like really looking forward to it. And you see, if you need anything, you got my number now, give me a buzz. And he's an 18-year-old kid who probably hasn't had the best run the past few years and let alone speak to first graders. You know, you might cross them in the pathway at the Tigers there, but to get a phone call from the Kangaroos fullback, the Melbourne Storm winning premiership, Clive Churchill medal winning fullback, that was pretty cool. And then, fast forward a few weeks later, and I think they just had World Cup, so they didn't get back till January, but it was probably more the staff impact. You know, you got the head physio, you got the head strength and conditioner, you got the head speed coordinator messaging you being like, let's get in early and let's do some work. You know, like they're meant to be on holidays, but they're asking me to come in. And I'm, like I said, I'm this 18-year-old kid who hasn't done anything in the game. And they're treating me probably like they'd treat Billy Slater or Cameron Smith or Cooper Cronk. And I think me seeing that early on just went, no, you know what? I've really got to give back. I've really got to work hard. I've got to earn my spot because they don't offer this to anyone. And once they did come back, once again, I was in awe. But the way, it's so special how they do it, but just the way they make you feel like you're their best mate. And that's probably something I've taken out of it. And I'd love to have that trait and I do work hard in it, but there wasn't one time where I was like in a game being like, oh, I shouldn't say anything because it's Cameron Smith. They were welcoming it, you know, they were, give me feedback, you know, when you need to speak your mind, even if it's wrong, it gives us an idea of where you're at. And just to have that transparency from someone who's at the top of their game to someone who hasn't even started yet, it was pretty special. But there's rough years in there as well. Like I said, I didn't get my opportunity straight away. I was fourth string, and I think there was a period in 2018 going into the 19 season. So the year before I debuted where... Yep. I still wasn't getting a run. I probably didn't get any raps from the coaches. But like what happens, right? You're the fourth string fullback. Of course, they're not going to put too much time technically into the game. Like physically, I was getting the reps. I was doing everything. But it was probably more I wasn't getting involved in those video sessions and probably feeling a bit sorry for myself. And looking back at it, I probably should have approached him, but I sort of sat back waiting for it to happen to me. And
did you think it was going to happen, or did you think, oh, hang on?
Oh, I just thought like, oh, they don't care about me, you know? Like,
and but did you still believe at that point, oh, I'll play for the Melbourne Storm, or you're like,
ooh. Nah. It's funny, like I didn't think I'd be a regular first grader until I'd played a few games.
Okay.
Like I thought, like you probably have a bit of imposter syndrome really of like, oh, do I really deserve this? But we were touching that. But I think, yeah, I just, there's probably a period 2018 going in 2019 where I was sitting down with my manager and he's like, oh, I don't know if they've got you in their future plans, you know? It's like, there's one other club that's interested, but like, and I remember talking about like, oh, it just sucks. Like, I don't know. And it was probably that, once again, that victim mentality of when I first, before I moved down there, it probably just came back a little bit and being away from home and not feeling like you had that number one support network around you. And yeah, it probably wasn't until that meeting where I sat down with Clinton and he's just like, mate, there's probably only one other club that'd be interested. I think you just give this preseason a crack and ask questions and see where you can get better. And yeah, just throw everything at it because, yeah, we'll see after. But he backed me just to the hilt. He just said, mate, I back you. I think you can be one of the great fullbacks. Just keep asking questions, keep being persistent. Things will happen. And yeah, long story short, I think Drinky got injured in a trial. Slatsy retired.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just Hughesy in front of me. And then I started getting a few reps at fullback. and then sort of midway, I debuted in round four that next year. So
just before you tell me about your debut, you said that the coach said you're going to have to work hard.
Mm.
In Craig Bellamy's world, what is working hard?
Yeah, well, I think physically working hard's his thing. But I think what I've learned over time is, yeah, it's not just physical, you know. It's what you do off the field. It's how you interact with your teammates. Are you really working hard at building relationships? In my position, that's really important, building relationships, studying the game. Those are probably the things that I've learned and now working hard is, where I think when I first got down there, I thought it was just physical. Like, yeah. I'm putting everything I can into training. I'm this 70-kilo bloke getting absolutely belted by the forwards in contact.
Who were you were, 70 kilos?
Yeah.
What are you now?
First, 83.
Right.
So props 70 when you. I first got down here, like physically I cannot be working any hard. I'm exhausted. This, like, is this really what footy's about? You know, that was my
right.
thought. Like,
but it was geez. The other working hard.
But it was the other working hard, bro. I thought right. that's where I figured out, I think, the point of difference is. And but no, you have to work physically hard without a doubt. But there's other areas that if you work hard at that too, it just makes that a little bit easier. So yeah, that's what I figured.
Debut, what are your memories of it?
Debut, yeah. 2019, round four against the Bulldogs. So
home or away?
Home.
Home.
Yeah, so home. Bulldogs were the team I went for when I was a kid. So it was one of those moments where, yeah.
Family come down?
Well, everyone came down, yeah. Mum, dad, brother, sister.
They do a jumper presentation?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, so Billy Slater presented my jersey. And yeah, it was one of those surreal moments where I probably didn't play in the position I wanted to. Like, I came off the bench and played in the ruck, which I did for the first few games of my career. And that was an experience within itself. But yeah, I remember going on, probably didn't play the best game. But yeah, that feeling of running on and the crowd not knowing who you are, but they were cheering. And it's probably just one of those moments where you reflect on your whole NRL journey and your coaches you had in your junior days and the guys that you play with in under seven sending you a message, and like, you're doing it for those people. And I think that was a really special feeling. And yeah, one that seems like a long time ago now, but I know not many people get to do it. So yeah, forever grateful that I did get that opportunity. And yeah, I've had some good luck since.
That is the end of Ryan Pappenhausen Part A. Much more joy coming your way in Part B. By the way, you do not want to miss the atmosphere and energy of a Storm game this season. From the big hits, the tries and the huge moments, Melbourne Storm, they do it all. Become a Storm member from as little as $55. $55 to be a Storm member? Nice. For an adult, plus a membership is 35% cheaper. So get your membership because it's the only way to roll. Storm have a membership fit for every fan at experience.melbournestorm.com.au. That's experience.melbournestorm.com.au.